going to try to finish 1 Samuel this evening. If we run into trouble, we'll stop and finish it next time around. Chapter 17, the story of David and Goliath. Very popular story, one known even to people without a Jewish or even Christian background. A lot of people know that story of the little boy fighting against the giant. What I want us to notice in verses 45 and 46, what David says to Goliath the Philistine. Verse 45, then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee. And I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Now, somebody at first reading this might think, boy, this little fellow is pretty arrogant, isn't he? He really thinks himself something. But notice what he says in verse 45. I come to you in the name of the Lord. He isn't claiming himself to be the one who's got the great ability. He's not the one who has the great fighting skill. He's not the one that's going to defeat Goliath all by himself. No, he lets Goliath know the Lord is going to do this. That's what he says at the beginning of verse 46. This day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand. He didn't say, I'm so great, I'm going to do this. But instead, he lets it be known that the Lord is going to do this, because this man had been defying the Lord. Many times when we have problems with enemies, and as Christians, we're always going to have some enemies. There are always going to be people that will be against us. Instead of taking our own vengeance, we need to remember to let the Lord deliver those individuals up. Let Him have the vengeance that He said He will take. We're going to see that same attitude in David later on with one of his biggest enemies, Saul. His own king was his enemy. Chapter 18, verse 14, says, and David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. We ever wonder why sometimes it seems like nothing goes right, and everything we do is messed up, and mistakes, and every time we turn around it seems like God's not with us? Notice what it says. David behaved himself wisely, and the Lord was with him. If we want the Lord to be with us, we've got to be with Him. We've got to stick to Him. We've got to do those things wisely, those things that He has commanded us to do. David did that at this point in his life, at least. And as David continued to be a follower after God and continued to do the wise things, not the foolish things, and Saul continued to do the foolish thing and not the wise thing, and we see that God followed with David and was with him, and God had turned his back on Saul. We saw that back in chapters 13 and 15. In chapter 19, verse 6, it says, and Saul hearkened or listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, as the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. I want us to say about two things from this passage. First of all, never assume that somebody's a lost cause. Jonathan could have said, well, Saul, my father Saul is just, he's just bent on killing David, and there's nothing I can do about it. But Jonathan didn't do that. Instead, when Jonathan knew that this was going to happen, he went to Saul and tried to talk to Saul, tried to convince him not to do this evil thing, not to kill an innocent person. And Saul listened. Even the most hardened person, the most hardened criminal, the most sinful individual in the world, may still have their heart pricked by the truth. In this case, Jonathan was able to convince Saul not to kill David. Now, we also have to remember, though, that just as quickly as someone can turn and do right, they can turn and do wrong. There in verse 6, Saul swears that as the Lord lives, well, we know how the Lord lives forever. And so in essence, Saul is saying, as long as the Lord is living, which we know is going to be forever, then he shall not be slain. That Saul is not going to kill him. Well, Saul may be many things, but he wasn't exactly a man of his word. Because just a short time later, in fact, in the very same chapter, just 9 verses later in verse 15, Saul sent messengers to see David saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may slay him. Just 9 short verses later. Well, that's not exactly forever, is it? We have to understand as Christians that many times people will say things, even promise things, that they either won't, can't, or never intended to keep. Make promises of one thing or another that they're going to do, knowing at the time sometimes that they have no intention of doing that. Other times, they may make those promises with the best of intentions, but something comes up later, and they have a change of heart, and they decide not to do that thing. Or maybe that they've promised something that they can't even control. Can't even fulfill some of those things that they've promised. But regardless of what people may do, even though they may turn on us, even though they may go back on their word, go back on their promises, we still, like Jonathan, need to be the kind of person who goes and speaks to someone. Perhaps they'll listen, as Saul did, for that short time at any case. In chapter 20. Chapter 20 and verse 31. In verse 30, Saul has gotten angry at his son Jonathan. He says in verse 31, for as long as the son of Jesse lives upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. Saul was the king over Israel. And the way that kingdoms work, much different than our society with a president that we vote for a new one, with a kingdom, the king's son, who's next in line, when the king dies, that son becomes the king, the prince becomes the king. That's the way that happens. Well, because of Saul's sinfulness, God said that wasn't going to happen in this case, but that he was going to give the kingdom to someone else. But Saul is still set on this idea that his son follow after him and become king over Israel. I want us to notice something, though, that he says here. David, remember, has been anointed by Samuel back in chapter 16 as the new king. But Saul hasn't given up the throne. Saul's still acting as king, even though David is the one God has chosen to be king. I want us to notice something. He says, for as long as the son of Jesse lives upon the ground, you shall not be established nor your kingdom. He's talking to his son Jonathan. This should make it clear to us that a kingdom can't have two kings at the same time. Saul makes it clear, as long as he's alive, he's going to be the king, and you're not going to get to be the king, Jonathan. If we don't kill him, you're never going to get to be the king. And yet, how many of us try to say that Jesus is the king, and then turn around and follow the devil as though he's the king? Kingdom can't survive with two kings. One of two things is going to have to happen. Either one of those kings is going to have to overcome the other one, or else that kingdom is going to be divided. In the religious world today, a lot of times, where Jesus is supposed to be king, man has become king, or in some cases, woman has become king. And they're making their own rules. They're living by their own regulations and laws, not living by the laws of God. Well, they're no longer a kingdom under God in those circumstances. But Jonathan was truly a good friend, willing even to turn his back on the kingdom Think about that. Jonathan was willing to give up being the king because of his friendship for David and because he knew what was right in God's sight. We need more people like Jonathan. In fact, shortly after that, in verse 33, Saul becomes so angry at Jonathan that he tries to kill his own son. That's how mad Saul had gone. He had lost his mind. He had given himself over to evil. In chapter 21, David had gone to see the priest and had gotten some help from the priest. Notice verse 7. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. David didn't think anybody was there, didn't think anybody saw him. Now, he wasn't, in this case, necessarily doing anything wrong, but this illustrates to us the point that even when we think there's no one around, even when we think no one saw, many times there was somebody there that we didn't notice. We didn't realize that they were watching. We didn't see them, but they saw us. David didn't see Doeg and know that's one of the servants of Saul. He didn't see that. But Doeg saw him and went back and reported it to Saul so that Saul could come chasing after him. Because of that, because of David going there to the priest and Doeg seeing him there and reporting it to Saul, Saul comes down to kill the priest, because they helped David out. And in verse 17 of chapter 22, the king turns and says to some of his soldiers, some of his servants, the footmen, it says, that stood about him, turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. Even evil men many times have a limit that they won't cross. In this case, these men were willing to go with Saul to chase David down, to hunt him down, to kill David. But when Saul commanded them to raise up their swords against the priests, they wouldn't do it. But let the next verse tell us something. Whatever the job is that is to be done, whether good or evil, there's somebody that will do it. The king said to Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests, and he slew that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. And he also, it says in the next verse, killed the whole city. Women, children, babies, animals. He killed them all. There's always somebody that's going to be willing to do almost anything. We've seen it throughout history, that there are always someone who's willing to do, whether it's something good that needs to be done. One person won't do it, God will find somebody else that will do it for him. When there's evil to be done, one person won't do it, Satan will find somebody else that will do it for him. We need to be sure that we are of that group that will do what God wants us to do, and not those that will do what Satan wants. Chapter 23, verse 12. David has saved this city named Keilah, saved them from the Philistines. Saul hears that he's there, and Saul's on his way. Verse 12, then said David, he's asking of the prophet to get the word of God. What does God say about this? He's asking, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will deliver thee up. We need to understand two things from this verse. First of all, the most obvious is, even when you help somebody, sometimes they'll turn around and stab you in the back. But that is not an excuse for not helping somebody. Did David know that was a possibility when he went to help him? Sure, it was a possibility. He wouldn't have asked if he didn't think it was a possibility. There's always a possibility that someone, even someone that you care about, even someone that you've helped, even maybe someone that you've suffered in order to help this individual, is going to turn their back on you and give you up. But that's no reason not to do what's right. The other thing we see here is that the future is not set in stone. The future can be changed. And we have a lot of talk these days about fate. Well, it was fate that this happened or that happened. That's not the case. God's creation of mankind with free will allows us by our decisions, by our choices, by the things that we do, our actions, to change the future. And here we see a perfect example of it. Verse 11, David had asked, will the men of Keilah deliver me up into his hand? Will Saul come down, as thy servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I beseech thee, tell thy servant. And the Lord said, he will come down. So God said, yes, Saul's going to come down there. Then the next verse, he asked, well, will the men of Keilah deliver me up? Are they going to betray me? And the Lord said, they will deliver thee up. Let me show you something in verse 13. Did David just go, oh, it's fate, I'm going to sit here and wait for Saul to come and get me, and these people are going to turn me over to him? No, that's not what he did at all. In verse 13 it says, then David and his men, which were about 600, arose and departed out of Keilah, and went whithersoever they could go. And it was told that David was escaped from Keilah, and he forbare to go forth. Saul didn't even go down to Keilah. Wait, God said he would. Is God a liar? No, God's not a liar. God was telling David what was going to happen if things continued as they were. Warning David. And there was something David could do about it. And he did it. He got up and got out of there. And when he got up and got out of there and Saul heard he wasn't there anymore, there wasn't any sense in Saul going there. And since Saul didn't go there and David wasn't there, the men of Keilah never turned him over to Saul, even though God said they would have if that had been the situation. We need to understand that everything we do in this life affects the future. It changes what's going to happen in the next minute, what's going to happen in the next hour, what's going to happen in the next day, the next month, year, and so on and so forth. We have control to some degree over what happens in the future. Now, certainly other people make decisions that may impact our lives and may change that future for us as well. But we do have a power over it. If we didn't, what would be the sense in going out and trying to study with people to teach them the gospel? If we couldn't change anything about the future, what would be the point? There'd be no point. We'd all just sit around and wait for the people that were going to be saved, like the Calvinist doctrine teaches, that those that are going to be saved are going to be saved, and those that are going to be lost, and there's nothing you can do about it one way or the other. But that's not what the Bible teaches. Right here in the book of 1 Samuel, back in the Old Testament, it was clear that a person has the ability to change their future. According to fate, David should have just stayed there and waited for Saul to come get him, because that's what was going to happen. But David wasn't one to give in to fate. He was one that was going to make his own choice and act upon that. Chapter 24, verse 17. David has had the opportunity, could have killed Saul. He did not. But what he did do was cut off just a little bit of Saul's robe so that he could show it to Saul. And he did that. Saul then is weeping, and he says in verse 17, said to David, thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. The Bible teaches us that we are to love our enemies, that we are to do good to them that persecute us. David shows us an example of that right here. Here he had the chance. Saul had been trying to kill him for weeks, months, maybe even years. Been chasing him all around the countryside, trying to catch him to kill him. Then, here's Saul in a vulnerable position. David could have killed him right then and there. But David didn't. Now the reason David says he didn't is because he is the Lord's anointed, he said back up in verse 10 at the end of the verse. And Saul was the Lord's anointed, but the Lord had departed from Saul. He had turned against Saul because Saul had turned against him. But that didn't keep David from refusing to take that life when he could have. Chapter 25, verses 38 and 39. It came to pass about 10 days after that the Lord smote Nabal that he died. And Nabal was a fellow. David and his men had been out there around Nabal's field, and they'd been protecting this man's cattle and sheep and fields. And at a particular time then, they sent a message to this Nabal and asked him, would you let us have some food, some things to eat, some things that we need? Now here, all this time, they'd been protecting this man from raiders, from the Philistines, from others. Just give us a look. No, he wasn't going to do that. David was about ready to go kill him until Nabal's wife, Abigail, came out and said, oh, please, don't do that. I'll bring you the things that you need. But notice what he says in verse 39. And David, because of what Abigail said, turned back and decided not to kill Nabal. And so then we see here in verse 38 that the Lord smote Nabal, that he died. Verse 39 then says, and when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be the Lord that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and hath kept his servant from evil. For the Lord hath returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. And David sent and communed with Abigail to take her to him to wife. So David, by doing what was wise, by not returning evil for evil, allowing God to allow that wickedness to come back on his own head, he says, we need to let that really sink into us. We need to constantly, in prayer, ask the Lord to help us in these areas. Help us in those relationships with those that are against us. Notice what he says. Blessed be the Lord that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach. Sometimes we think it's sinful to ask God to do something if it would be contrary to somebody else, if it would in any way harm them. But it's not wrong for us to ask God for these things. David, on many occasions, asked God to do what he had promised. God had said, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. David on many occasions asked the Lord, Lord, do what you said. Pay back those that are evil, those that are wicked. Let them face the consequences of their actions. There's nothing wrong with our asking that today as well. Chapter 26, verse 21. Then said Saul, I have sinned, return my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool, and have erred exceedingly. Again, David had an opportunity to kill Saul, and he didn't. He saved Saul's life. And David here exemplifies for us a New Testament principle. Jesus says, if your brother comes to you 7 times in one day and says, I repent, forgive him. David exemplified that principle over and over again with Saul. Saul would come, try to kill him. Then at some point he'd say, I'm sorry. Here we've seen now 3 times that he said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to kill you, David. And every time he's turned right around just a short time later and gone back after him, trying to kill him again. But we need to realize that our place is not to judge another. Our place is not to get vengeance on another. It's our place to obey God, to follow after him. And it's a difficult thing, probably one of the most difficult commandments in all of the Bible, to love your enemies. Chapter 27, verses 7 and 8. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. And David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites and the Jezreelites and the Amalekites, for those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. Remember that the children of Israel were still supposed to be taking the land. And here David is in the country of the Philistines. He's living in the enemy's land, but he's still fighting the Lord's battles. Sometimes we feel like we're so outnumbered, there's so many against us, and we're in such a horrible place that it's hopeless, that we can't do anything from here. But David was living right there for a year and four months. He was living in the land of the Philistines, but he was still going out and fighting the Lord's battles. He was still going out and fighting the Jeshurites and the Jezreelites and the Amalekites. He was still going out and fighting those people of the land of Canaan that God had told the Israelites to destroy. He was still working for the Lord. So no matter what situation we find ourselves in, no matter where we find ourselves living, there is still work for the Lord that can be done there. Chapter 28, verse 12. Here Saul goes to a witch. She's a psychic of sorts. Verse 12, after he's told her to bring up Samuel, says, and when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. This woman surprised herself. No doubt she had been convincing people that she was seeing spirits and ghosts and things for a long time. But when she actually saw Samuel coming up out of the grave, she cried out with a loud voice. She was surprised. You know, psychics and spiritists and all of these people are no different today than they were back then. If it really happened, they'd be very surprised. They're faking. This woman was faking, and when she finally actually saw what she was claiming she'd been seeing all along, it shocked her so bad she screamed. She cried out with a loud voice. And then she turned to Saul and said, oh, you've deceived me, for you're Saul. And notice what verse 13, the king said unto her, be not afraid, for what sawest thou? Well, she was in some hot water then. She was really scared after this situation came to pass. But we need to understand there's a reason that God tells us to stay away from these kinds of things. Saul himself sealed his doom by going and bringing Samuel back from the grave. Now certainly God had to allow Samuel to come back. He had to allow him to come back to prophesy to Saul one last time. And Samuel told Saul, Saul, you're going to die. You and your sons are going to be with me before the sun sets tomorrow. Chapter 29, verse number 5. David, remember, was living with the Philistines. And the Philistines now are fixing to go to war against Israel. David thinks, ooh, boy, this would be good. I could get in there on the Philistine side and look what I could do, the havoc I could reap on them. I could just do all sorts of things to them because they wouldn't be expecting it. But some, when they saw David coming, said, is not this David of whom they sang one to another in dances, saying, Saul slew his thousands and David his 10,000s? They remembered the report that they had had of David. They remembered his reputation. You know, when you have done something against someone, it's very, very hard to ever overcome that reputation. A good reputation many times can be forgotten very quickly by people. But when you've done something against them, something that you shouldn't have, in this case it was something David should have done, but these people were his enemies. They still knew his reputation. They still knew who he was and what had been said of him. We need to remember that. The things that we do follow after us many years on down the road. After we ourselves many times have forgotten those incidents, others who were involved in them still remember and remember vividly those things that we did. Chapter 30 and verse 6. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man, for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. They're David's own people. We just saw in chapter 29 that the Philistines remembered David's reputation. They remembered what he had done, killing Goliath and defeating the Philistines. But here David's own men, they came back to the city and found the city had been burned with fire and everything had been taken. Their wives, their children had been taken away. And they're ready to stone him. They're ready to turn on him just that fast. And what had he even done? He hadn't even done it. It wasn't his fault that these things had happened. Many times, when we're angry, we take out our anger on an innocent party. David was grieved just as much as they were. His wives had been taken captive. His belongings had been taken just as much as the other men. Here he was, an innocent victim of the case, and they turned on him. They were ready to stone him even. But notice what it says at the end of the verse. David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. When all men forsake us, all women, even your dog won't look at you, the Lord is still there. We need to remember that. Then finally, chapter 31, verse 6. The end of a chapter, the end of a book, the book of 1 Samuel, but also the end of Saul's kingdom. Verse 6 says, so Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. Here we see the end of Saul's kingdom. Finally, after all of that time of doing wrong, of turning against God and going against him, he finally takes his own life and ends his chapter, at least in this world, ends his kingdom. And David now is poised, as we go into 2 Samuel, to take over the kingdom of Israel, to become king and to lead that nation. We saw many principles here in the book of 1 Samuel, many more that we could have gotten out of those chapters. We just touched on one thing in each chapter. There's so much in this book. Every time we read through it, we can find something else we didn't know. Are you living as you should? Are you doing the things you should? Are you living wisely as David did? Are you keeping your word, or like Saul, are you going back on it, making promises, and then going back on it and turning it back around? Are you there, always ready to do good, always ready to forgive, always ready to love those who are your enemies? Or are you like more like Saul, trying to destroy everybody and anything that might challenge you in any way? If you're here this evening and you have a need to respond to the invitation in any way, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.